We're back. It's the Shots and Tenier NFL podcast with our special 2026 NFL draft preview. Our show is April 16th, 2026. I am Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He is Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at the Two Deep Zone, where he has been doing a ton of draft previews of prospects. And we are joined, as we are every year, by Benjamin Robinson from Grinding the Mocks, who knows a lot about where guys are going to go and who's rising and who is falling. And if you are watching us live, you can make comments and ask questions about specific prospects. And by the way, we will also be here next Friday morning at 11 a.m. to round up round one.
Yes.
So today we preview and next week we review. So we're going to start, we're going to get to Mike's favorite players in a little bit, but we're going to start with Ben looking at players that have been rising and falling over the last couple of weeks in mock drafts, which again, like mock drafts are actually quite predictive of how teams are thinking, because a lot of people who do mock drafts, not only are they watching the same prospects, but they're plugged in. Some of them are plugged in with the insiders, and they sort of know where teams are leaning right now. So, Ben, let's go through five players who have been rising over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, good to be back on with you guys. I know we didn't get to chat a lot during the combine, so we'll be catching up right now with everybody else. I was way too busy. But, you know, since then, there's been a lot of activity going on in mock drafts and big boards. And with the draft a week away, things are starting to come into focus a little bit. So the biggest riser
in my
data.
Yeah, it's an interesting draft because I think everyone agrees.
Oops.
Sorry, everyone agrees this is not the greatest draft. And therefore, I think when you get into the second and third rounds, you're going to see more drafting for need rather than best player available.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know. Everyone always says, you know, is this draft different from all other drafts? And it was not Passover very long ago. And for the most part, my answer to that is, it's unclear. This draft, I think there's always the distribution of talent is like a little bit different. And then you'll hear a lot about the top players in this class not being premium position players.
Right.
And so there'll be, I think, some amount of this always happens. There are always players in almost every class who aren't necessarily playing like high value positions. And so those players will tend to go pretty high because the best players, regardless of position, usually go pretty high. You know, even running backs will go really high. The sheer linebackers will go high. The sheer safeties will go high as well. You know, I still think that a lot of this stuff will still hold true, that in terms of building better teams, it's still better to go for these premium positions. Digging into the biggest risers, the biggest riser in my data for the last 2 weeks coming into draft week is Georgia Tech guard Keelan Rutledge. It's a big jump in my data where I had him 61st ranked 2 weeks ago, and this week he's 45th. So that's just a lot of momentum for the guard from Georgia Tech. I was surprised, even accounting for the value of draft pick, jumping 16 spots as he had is pretty big. So, you know, I think he was a Senior Bowl guy, that matters a lot to some teams. Some teams like drafting really good, experienced players from the Senior Bowl. I think they view that as lower risk. So he's a guy I think you could watch maybe getting into the end of round one if he continues to rise as he has.
He was a very interesting guy to watch on tape. He's at Georgia Tech, a system that ran a lot of pulling guard concepts, a lot of counters, a lot of traps. I have it on my site right now. I think he pull blocked like 330 times. No one else in the nation, no one in the NFL pull blocks 330 times. That's like Washington Hoggs from 1982. That's the kind of pull blocking he was doing. Very quick-footed, would get into those holes, would hit guys, you know, a little bit undersized, quicker, kind of like an interesting, cool storyline guy to talk to during the combine. So he's somebody who might have been, somebody evaluating him might have been like this is a square peg initially, because of that unique system. But it's very possible that some teams look at this guy and say, oh, that's a moldable trait. That's a trait that we can project to being a quick-footed guard in our system.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, this list is pulling from round one and round two guys. So I still think he's probably more likely to be a round two guy than a round one guy. But he's definitely being discussed more than he was before.
It sounds like if he's up to 45, then he might be the second or third guard taken.
Yeah, you know, there's some other guards that have been ahead of him for a bit. I know, like, the Dane Brueglers of the world love Chase Besantis, the guard from Texas A&M. The Texas A&M offensive line is going to, like, all of them are going to get drafted potentially, you know, almost next week. And but yeah, I think he's definitely in that race. The number one guard is still going to be Olaiva Vega Ioane. Mm-hmm. Say that five times fast, but Vega, Ioane from Penn State. So it'll be really interesting to see where he goes. People talk about him as being really awesome, and yet I don't see him in the same kind of top guard as like a Quentin Nelson, where he was ranked as like a top 10 prospect. Ioane is still in the middle of the draft. You know, I think you'll hear a lot about the Ravens having strong interest in him. I find that to be a little strange, given where the Ravens are in their team build, given some of what their needs are. I don't think they can find a guard later on. But that's been a sweet spot for him. My second biggest riser is David Bailey, the edge rusher from Texas Tech. He was fourth in my data 2 weeks ago. He's third today, but the momentum is carrying him to potentially being the number two ranked prospect by the time I update my numbers next week. There's a really strong battle going on between him and Arvel Reese, the linebacker edge rusher hybrid from Ohio State. And so he's a player that this kind of reminds me of that Trevon Walker, Aiden Hutchinson year, where with Walker, you had to like kind of look a little bit closer, like, oh man, there's still like a bit of projection here, but we see a lot of traits we like. With Reese, you see that, but he wasn't a primary edge rusher in college. And then with Aiden Hutchinson and David Bailey, it's like, well, yeah, like really good production, really athletic. The risk feels a little bit lower for Bailey. And so the momentum is at his sails. In my mock draft that I put out a week or so ago, I had him as the number two overall pick, just from a personal perspective. I think the Jets might be leaning that way, that, you know, he's still a high quality player. He has a high ceiling and he has played edge rusher before a full-time role at Texas Tech. So that's a player that's going to be that number two pick is where the draft really begins.
He is Zach Sears' favorite player.
Okay.
Right. You know that Arvel Reese, obviously his projection is not as high because he was not a full-time edge rusher in college. And the Jets canceled a top 30 visit with Bailey, which I think means nothing.
Right.
Everything means nothing.
Could be a smokescreen where they've decided he's the guy and they don't even need to do the visit. Or it could be they've decided Reese is the guy and they don't need to do the visit. Like, I don't think that that tells you anything about whether it's going to be Reese or Bailey.
I like the way you describe like Reese being like Trevon Walker in the sense that you're doing a projection based on skills no matter what, and Bailey being the pure guy. How much of the move, the 4-3, is any of that Bain sliding down? I think we're going to talk about Bain in a little bit, sliding down with the allegations and the instant report that surfaced a couple weeks ago.
I don't think it has as much to do with Bain falling. I think it's been a battle between Reese and Bailey for a bit now. I think ever since the combine and the public suddenly finding that Reuben Bain has short arms is like a bigger impact on his draft stock than anything that's happened off the field. When I think about the situation when we were all at the combine, when the Jalen Carter news came out, you know, no one doubted Jalen Carter's talent. It was the off the field stuff. People don't doubt Reuben Bain. They actually do doubt Reuben Bain's talent a little bit. They think that he's like a huge outlier in terms of what you think about when you think about an edge rusher. He doesn't win in that traditional way that a top 10 edge rusher wins. You'd want them to be a little bit more on like winning around the edge and speed. Instead, you know, Bain is doing that, but he's going right through people. His play strength is his superpower. And we don't necessarily like to think as the power rushers as, you know, those best rushers in the league, but a lot of the really good pass rushers in the league are power rushers. Yeah. And the thing about Bane is that it's a little bit more about he has that inside-outside versatility. And so, but we don't necessarily think about those kinds of guys as the premier edge rushers in the NFL.
Right. One thing about Bane, I guess we're doing it. I'm sorry I introduced it, but like, I think he only had 3 sacks going into like mid-November of last season and then went absolutely ham.
In the playoffs.
And on the one hand, it's like, well, that's great. You went ham in the playoffs. I think he looked phenomenal against Indiana's line and the other lines there. But then where's the consistency of this guy who suddenly like turns it on at this point in the playoffs? A little bit of a concern when you're putting him against Reese, when you're putting him against David Bailey, who you have a season long dominance that you can look to.
As long as we're talking about Bane now, and I'm just going to preview, he shows up in the Fallers. I will note there's a big difference between this and the Laremy Tunsil.
Okay.
Because by coming out 2 weeks before the draft, everybody's able to do their due diligence on this car accident.
Yes.
And the word is that the teams all knew about this. I don't know how it never made it into the public. I don't know how Ollie Connolly was the person to break this news. Ollie is a fantastic analyst. He is not a newsbreaker. It's weird.
He broke Belichick.
What'd you say?
He might have broken Bill Belichick to North Carolina. So I think he majors in film analysis and minors in like insider trading.
And credit the due diligence that is going and getting those police reports, because that's where you have to go.
Yeah. Apparently the Laremy Tunsil thing happened that morning.
Yes.
Right. Lael Collins. That was like the day before, and he fell out of the draft entirely. By having 2 weeks, everybody will have their chance to figure out. And apparently the girl who died, her family doesn't blame Bane for the accident. They are not saying he's a bad person. This has all been cleared by the law authorities. It sounded like a bigger deal when it was first came out than it may be. Not that it's a good thing. It's a terrible thing.
Right.
But I mean, somebody died. It's a terrible thing. But that it's not that he is this out of control drunk driver problem.
Collins looked like it was a bigger deal.
Looked like
it was a domestic, and it turned out it wasn't a domestic, or at least it wasn't involving him specifically. These things happened.
Because it came out like that day.
No, you're right. With 2 weeks, and again, the league, the rest of us were not informed of this, but the league was informed of this months ago and on top of things. So,
all right, let's get back to our risers.
Yeah, third biggest riser is Texas A&M wide receiver Casey Concepcion.
I definitely see that because people are talking about him on a lot of podcasts right now.
Yeah, the fantasy football people are finally getting into draft analysis, and a wide receiver that they like is speeding up the boards. The thing that's really interesting about Concepcion is he transferred to Texas A&M from NC State specifically to play better competition in the SEC. And Texas A&M, I just mentioned before, had this awesome offensive line. Mm-hmm. And the quarterback really was what held them back this year. They made the playoffs, but everyone said whenever they've watched Texas A&M, the quarterback is the problem. The thing that's interesting about Casey Concepcion is that he is known dropper of the football.
Yes.
And that is the thing that comes up a lot in the discussion around him as well. Like, why are we willing to draft this guy? Well, he's getting open. And so that's a skill. Mm-hmm. We know that there's different pieces of skill that are sticky in terms of translating from college to pro, and drop rate is one of the less sticky ones. So it's a little bit less concerning. I know that there are other receivers in this class who have like a vice grip for hands, like Jordan Tyson, a really good catcher of the football. But yeah, Casey Concepcion, I think, is like making his case for being in that top of the second half of the next group of wide receivers, him, Indiana's Omar Cooper, and Washington's Denzel Boston.
Concepcion is a really, really good punt returner, really skilled punt returner, bunch of touchdowns, bunch of long runs. That's probably impacting what teams are thinking. Let me ask you, though, Ben, the fantasy side of things, you say that moves guys up the mock drafts. Would you see that a lot where when the fantasy analysis kicks in, that like alters the way the mock drafts look?
Not too much. I just think that right now there are more people paying attention to some of that. And people there's just more offseason content happening right now as we get closer to the draft and people complete their, you know, film reviews and such. When I look at his first round mock draft shares, just the teams that he's matched the most with, the 49ers, the Browns, and the Bills. So those are teams that are more like near the end of the first round. Right. But that's where he's headed right now. He's headed
the Bills
kind of like
need
in those mid 20s.
Slot guy.
Brady can run the five-man mesh, man. It's going to happen.
All I remember was last off season, Brandon Bean going on a local Buffalo radio show and saying that they didn't need more wide receivers, only to somehow it come out that they don't like the wide receiver they drafted 2 years ago, and they drafted him because Sean McDermott wanted him, and then only for Joe Brady to have to come in and say, no, we really like him. So wide receiver is definitely on the table, whether Brandon wanted to admit it or not. So,
all right. Your fourth riser is?
Arizona State offensive tackle Max Iheanacho.
Yeah.
A really cool story. He's a Nigerian immigrant, came to America, didn't play football at all until he got to junior college. He was going to go to Fresno State, but then apparently the offensive line coach for Fresno State went to Arizona State, and that's how he wound up at Arizona State. Really like a strong developmental left tackle prospect. Really great Senior Bowl, was one of my biggest risers coming out of the Senior Bowl, and has kind of established himself as a potentially borderline round one pick. So, but yeah, he's a really interesting guy. There's just a lot of projection there, but he has kind of the measurables and some of the film that you want when you see a first round left tackle.
I absolutely love him for a team like the Eagles or the Patriots, who could wait a year until Lane Johnson retires or Morgan Moses retires and continue to teach him.
Didn't Morgan Moses already retire?
Nope, he's coming back this year.
Okay, gotcha. I thought I saw he retired.
From Atlanta had retired. He was he missed last year, their right tackle. Okay. Chicago's head guys retired. But nope, Morgan Moses is back next year.
There's a lot of
the second quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, there's a lot of pro day tape of Mike Vrabel working out Max Iheanacho. So it seems like there's a budding bromance there. I won't go any further.
Stop.
We're not going.
Okay, let's go on to the next one.
We're not going there. Yeah.
Yeah. My fifth biggest riser is Cincinnati linebacker Jake Golday, who kind of like similarly to Rutledge has gone from being like a borderline second round guy. I had him 71st in my rankings 2 weeks ago to 55th. There were some analysts who had thought that he was a like more second round, first round borderline talent, leading like after the season. Like I think Jordan Reed from ESPN had him in a late first round mock of his at one point. But yeah, he's steadily been just a strong day two guy. I project him to go in day two right now, but he's been a big riser when you include those day two guys and those day one guys.
Big thumpy, big linebacker, like good, like run stuff. He can cover too.
Setting edge.
Like you're looking for old fashioned Sam type linebacker. That's what he is, and I think he's a heck of a player. Linebacker's actually pretty deep. That's why I'm surprised to hear him getting that high.
Yeah. I think he's the kind of guy who can set an edge. I think he'll be in demand in round two.
All right, let's take on five players who have been falling over the last couple of weeks.
So the first player that I'm going to list is Miami offensive tackle Francis Maunoa. And I still have him as my top offensive tackle. But I think so there was an issue that he had to go back for a medical recheck. I don't know if that's sort of what's happening here. And that's sort of, hey, what's going on there? He didn't really miss much time. He was a right tackle only at Miami for all 3 years that he was there when he came to Miami as a five-star recruit. So I don't really, maybe there's the combination of right tackle only and injury. The teams that are being kind of, that he's being really pointed at a ton in mock drafts, Arizona at pick three. I don't think people view him as the third overall prospect in this draft, but they think that Arizona just really has a strong need for linemen, which is fair. I think they should be thinking kind of about this draft for next year, setting up for them drafting a quarterback. If they don't draft a quarterback this year, I think there's a lot of sort of Ty Simpson to them, but as a trade up, mm-hmm. sort of like similar to how the Giants, you know, did last year with Jackson Dart. But yeah, he's an interesting guy, just really consistent, solid player. Some people like him better at guard. That's not surprising given what they've said about some of the other tackle prospects in this class, like Utah's Spencer Fano. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's still my top ranked tackle, but he went from 5th to 8th. And there's a little bit of clumping there where, you know, he may not be an 8th on average, but it just stacks that way because there's just a lot of clumping right now in the top 10.
Right. I can imagine some people have him going to the Browns. You mentioned the Cardinals, some of these teams where it's like you plug and play a tackle where you need. And then if he slips out of that, he has to slip to this next tier, yep. I would imagine. To this is the next group that needs alignment.
Yeah, the next teams after the Cardinals and the Browns in terms of my mock draft shares for Maui Noah are the Miami Dolphins, who pick at 11, and the Giants, who pick at 5. So there's just like not necessarily like a single team that he's being mocked to the most. I mean, the Cardinals, but I think that'll change.
Unless the Cardinals trade down from 3, they are not taking this guy.
Yeah,
no, you just take the other edge. The other edge. Take Reese.
Yep, right. I think that's kind of as more of these mocks, credible mocks come out, I think you'll start to see that change.
Okay.
The next player that I want to talk about is Clemson cornerback Avion Terrell. Terrell sounds familiar. He's the brother of Falcons cornerback AJ Terrell. So good family, good football family. You know, a lot of Clemson prospects this year have experienced fall in their draft stocks from where we were looking at them at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Terrell is just one, but Peter Woods, the defensive tackle, TJ Parker, the edge rusher, Cade Klubnick, the quarterback, Antonio Williams, the wide receiver. I'm not really sure necessarily what was going on at Clemson, so he had so he didn't run at the combine, but he did have a pro day, and he's been dealing with some injuries, and he probably re-aggravated a hamstring injury that he had that caused him to run in the 4.6s in the 40-yard dash. I think that's what's happening with this. It's like, well, you know, if that's his 40-yard time, then, you know, maybe he's more of like I feel like there was like a cornerback out of Florida 1 year that had really good tape but didn't run well. Maybe like Jalen Tabor, I think, was the guy. And it's just like, well, you know, good tape, but it doesn't matter if we don't think that you can run at the NFL level with these guys. And he got drafted later than people thought based on the tape. So, but yeah, Terrell, really interesting prospect. I think he still could be like a late first round pick. In my what would I do mock draft, I had I think I had him landing with the Seahawks or something like that, like the later end of the first round. I think they would like his kind of style of play.
He's a hardcore badass, lots of forced fumbles, high motor guy, and everybody's going to wonder about that 40 time. I mean, you don't draft a guy with this in mind, but my thought about him is if this doesn't work because of the speed, maybe he can be a really good strong safety.
Yeah, it's possible. One thing also we talked about on the comment thread, he was trending downwards. You mentioned two cornerbacks you mentioned one and I mentioned one who were trending upward, that if you're just doing this team needs the best cornerback, you take Terrell out, you put other guys in.
Jackson
from San Diego State and the injured guy from Tennessee.
Jermod McCoy and then Chris Johnson, like you said.
Chris Johnson.
So Chris Johnson has been rising quite a bit. I think people viewed him as like a top of the second round guy, but he could definitely go into the first round. I think there's some people who are saying he could be like a mid first round guy. I don't quite think so. I still think there are cornerbacks above him, like Tennessee's Colton Hood, Tennessee's Jermod McCoy. I've kind of compared this situation to the Derek Stingley, Sauce Gardner draft that we had a few years ago, where Stingley was really good the year before and he was hurt and he didn't really play the whole season. And there were questions about, will he test at the combine? He didn't. He had his own workout. Things looked great. He ended up going, you know, pick earlier than Sauce Gardner, despite Gardner having the better overall portfolio in terms of the profile because he had the extra season of play. And in this case, that role is taken up by Mansoor Delane, the cornerback from LSU. So I'm not. It's very possible that McCoy could go before Delane, but the Terrell's stock I don't think is being impacted by McCoy's rise. It's more being impacted by, you know, the rise of the Chris Johnsons, like I said.
Okay.
All right. Your next faller is the guy we already talked about.
Yeah, Reuben Bain, the edge rusher from Miami. So yeah, outlier profile. The big issue with him is not necessarily the off-field stuff, like we said, but the short arms that make him really just like, in terms of like the next gen stats era, you look at him, it just like sticks out a ton. So the question is he a top 10 guy? That's what I thought his floor was for a while. I think now you have to question if the top 10 is his floor. I could see him going as low as Dallas at 12 or even Baltimore at 14. So, but yeah, it's definitely not as strong of a floor as I thought kind of coming into the process, where I thought top 10 was his floor. It's kind of potentially going lower than that right now.
Yeah, I think I ranked him 10th or 11th overall after all was said and done on the 2Deep 96, which will come out on Monday of next week, because I wound up putting like Jermod McCoy ahead of him, where it's like other positions or these guys feel more comfortable with as saying this is going to be a high impact player.
Yep.
All right, faller number four.
Follower number four is Georgia linebacker CJ Allen, who has been, I don't know, he's, I feel like he's just kind of like a run-stuffing linebacker, like pretty good run-stuffing linebacker. Played at Georgia, where they have a lot of really good players on the defensive line. I think there's a lot of people who like him. The question is that a first-round linebacker in a deep linebacker class? And I think more and more people are saying, hey, I'm actually kind of like more interested in like Texas Tech linebacker Jacob Rodriguez, who we're going to talk about a little bit later as a guy that Mike may or may not like. I'll let Mike reveal that himself. So I think people are kind of questioning, like, what's so good about him? He had really good film last year. Like, he was definitely like on the radar prospect. Sometimes it takes a lot of time for people to just kind of come off of that perception of him. If he didn't really change that much and you had him ranked high before, like, why, you know, what's happening here? So some of it is also like the linebacker class and the needs of relative lack of a need of a linebacker. So he went from 28th in my rankings to 35th in my rankings over the past 2 weeks.
That's not a huge slide. He's very young. I think he turns 21, like some, he hasn't turned 21 yet. Let's put it that way. Or he just did or something like that. So that's, adds the projection to him, but you're right. It's like, oh, this is a really good, solid Georgia linebacker. And that's the scouting report, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And then my last faller, perhaps maybe the most controversial, is Alabama quarterback Ty Simpson, who went from 25th overall in my rankings 2 weeks ago to 31st. He's been a consistent faller after his rise, when he had that really strong start to the season. And then there's a mixture of playing better teams and or getting hurt. Didn't really love what we saw of him in the playoffs against, you know, the elite competition. Had some good games, like his game against Auburn was actually pretty good. In the Iron Bowl was all right. And there hasn't been as much discussion as in relative to previous years about, hey, like, is he going to be drafted in the first round? I think that there's most of the projections that I'm seeing right now are trade-ups. Right, where he gets drafted based on like Arizona trading into a late first round pick to draft him, or just someone taking him in the second round. So my like more advanced probabilistic model that I work with my team clients, that has had him as a second round pick for a while. So to me, we'll see, but I think that this year we should only expect one quarterback to be drafted on round one, and then round two there might be one or two more. But yeah, this quarterback class is pretty weak in terms of the top and the depth.
I could see the trade up, especially because with a quarterback getting the fifth year option on the contract becomes sort of an incentive, like to be able to control if he does break out, we have more control over him. But I could see him going in the third.
Yeah, I think it's very possible that he goes in the third. I think the fifth year option has become like a little bit overrated. Like, if you think he's a good player and you want to sign him to a long-term extension, just sign him to a long-term extension. The fifth year option stuff can come into play if you have like players who maybe like just want to negotiate real hard, or like like the Tyler Linderbaums of the world, where like, hey, like, are like the linebackers, because of the CBA, they get lumped in with edge rushers where the fifth year option matters. For the quarterback, I don't know if it matters as much. They're gonna, if he's good, you're going to take it anyway, but right. if he's not, then you're going to extend him.
Okay.
All right, let's go through some of Mike's favorite players. I asked him to pick out three players he likes more than conventional wisdom and three he likes less, and then Ben can comment if these players might be rising or falling right now. Take it away. We'll start with one of the best mustaches of the 2026 draft.
Is that Jacob Rodriguez?
Oh, God, it's good.
The Syracuse punter, Stonehouse, is the winner, by the way, in mustaches. But Rodriguez, oh, okay. I think that's, he's got a solid, handsome dude mustache, and he is all over the field. He is all over the field. One of the things I'll just look at a linebacker, like sometimes you'll see him miss tackle, you'll see him get rocked by a blocker. But how many times do you just see him in the frame, involved with the tackle? And that's what impressed me about Rodriguez. Of course, he's been a starter for a couple of years, major program. He's won every defensive trophy in the world. I went in thinking I was going to be skeptical about this guy who was just like, you know, eating up tackles or whatever. Really, really impressed with his range, really impressed with his instincts. So I think I have him 15th overall, which has to be higher than the conventional wisdom.
Yeah. So... He's my, I mean, you know, we know you love, we know you love your linebackers. Last year you had Sean Dolak from Buffalo as a top 100 player who went undrafted. We won't talk about that. Yeah.
Erase Sean Dolak. This is not Sean Dolak.
Yeah, he's definitely not Sean Dolak. So yeah, he's my 43rd ranked player, my fourth ranked linebacker. But yeah, you do see some mock drafts where he does wind up in round one. So you won't be out of company if thinking about him as a day one pick. I think it's a little more unlikely. I think he's more likely a higher second round pick, but I could see him sneaking like late into late round one. It wouldn't totally surprise me.
Right. Just like the player. Definitely like him. Number two, and this is probably just like super controversial. Chris Brazel, the wide receiver from Tennessee, 6'4", fast, extremely productive. I liked the film. I have him ranked overall 22nd. I have him higher than some of the other receivers that a lot of people have in the first round. And I have a funny feeling that the mock draft and the draft communities downside of him is that he played for Tennessee, and Tennessee's wide receivers always look awesome because of Josh Heupel's system. And therefore I'm probably overrating him.
Yeah. So I have him as a end of round two kind of guy. I think he'll go on day two, but yeah. He's my 10th ranked wide receiver.
I figured he'd be more like high round two. Interesting.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of buzz. There is some high round two buzz, but most of the buzz is below that. Yeah.
I just refuse to say, well, he's 6'4". He ran a 4.3 40. This draft is thin, but, you know, because Jalin Hyatt was bad, and therefore you can't draft Chris Brazel because, like, it's a system fit. And you see him out there, and he's winning consistently in man coverage and things like that. I think maybe we're like overthinking this from the media side for this particular player.
Playmaker liked him.
Who liked him?
Production. Playmaker liked him.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. I think there's like your different flavors of Tennessee wide receiver. You know, there's your Jalin Hyatts, and then there's your Cedric Tillmans.
That's another one.
And then last year you had Dante Thornton. And so, yeah, there definitely is a type there. So I think it's hard to project them. And so in the media, we'll see like, hey, he's really fast. But then I remember there was this clip of, you know, a wide receiver coach asking Jalin Hyatt, like, basically at his pro day, like, we want to see you run routes. And he's like, yeah, I can run routes. And he's like, well, we're going to see that. And I guess they thought that he basically wasn't a good route runner.
Yeah.
He was just a straight line speed guy. I think that's basically been true throughout his career. So
I'll say this in light of that, and in light of Velus Jones, who was like this sort of like fantasy by the Bears. But I was at Brazel's podium from us at the combine, hearing him talk and things like that. I think he's got his act together. I think he's somebody who's going to come in and be able to take coaching, et cetera, which might help in that regard. All right. Who else did I have? Oh, another wide receiver, Zachariah Branch. This is Slotty McSlotface out of Georgia. Pure slot, like unadulterated. This is what he does. I think I forget what percentage of his catches were screens, what percentage of them were shallow drags. It was ridiculously high percentage of each of those, but man, is he fast, man, is he elusive, man, is he quick. I don't like a lot of the wide receivers in this class. I look at them and didn't like them. I like this one thing that he does that is very valuable, And I actually have him ranked 30th overall.
Yeah, when I knew we were coming on, I was reminded of when we were talking about Bo Nix, you know, a couple of years ago, and you said that Bo Nix ran the micro pass offense.
Yes.
Zachariah Branch is the micro pass wide receiver.
Yes.
Just like a really like a huge screen merchant. You know, he's my ninth ranked wide receiver, like a little bit behind Brazil. Mm-hmm. So it was really funny that, you know, when he announced he was declaring, his agent got Jordan Schultz to say that he was a potential first round pick. He transferred to Georgia from USC along with his brother Zion. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Zachariah, you know, really talented, really fast, high ranked recruit, all that stuff. And then you're looking at what he did, and I struggle to see an NFL offense that would use him outside of a gadget situations. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of like manufactured touches and just like really hard to bet on that kind of player. I've seen like comparisons to kind of like, man, back in the day, people would have loved him kind of like a Tavon Austin type.
Right.
Open offense. But yeah, so interesting guy. I like watching him, but I'm not sure he's going to be much at the NFL level.
You're right in that, like, it seemed like 10, 12 years ago, particularly in the media scouting thing, every one of these nifty shifty slot guys was like, oh, we're over the moon for Tavon Austin, who was a first round pick, I'm gonna draw blanks on some of these names right now, Trent Taylor and guys like that. But it seemed like it was a higher evolution of those abilities to me. And I think that there's going to be a role for him. I think he can return kicks too, which will help him in the NFL. All right. Now, guys, I like less of the consensus. I wrote on the board, everyone. I don't like anyone in this draft. I'm really a curmudgeon. But let's pick a couple, and I'm going to start with Denzel Boston from Washington, who's a high first rounder in a lot of people's opinions. I think I have him late in the first round or something like that. But I don't think he's the boundary winner, 50-50 contested catch guy that everyone thinks he is.
So yeah, he is my sixth ranked wide receiver. In my latest update, I have him 25th overall. So late first round, you're not that far off of the consensus. I think there is some amount of, is he going to become AJ Brown insurance for the Eagles? You know, I swear that's what people have been saying. So, you know, one of the worst kept secrets in National Football League right now is that the Eagles are potentially going to trade AJ Brown after June 1st,
right,
because of their salary cap conditions.
Right.
When I did our first round of projections, I almost did AJ Brown to the Patriots because that's what everyone thinks is going to happen.
Yeah. So, but I think there's some other teams that are interested in him around that point. So if the Browns decide to go offensive lineman first, mm-hmm, then he's, I think, in play for them. I think he's also in play for Buffalo. I think the Steelers would be interested in him because they love their big, tall wide receivers who can jump. And then, you know, the Eagles and, you know, potentially maybe even the Dolphins with like one of their late picks. So I think he has his spots, but, you know, more of like a late first round guy. So I don't think you're that far off in your assessment of him.
Who are your top six then? You got Tate, and then you've got Lemon, and then you got, what are they?
So it's Carnell Tate from Ohio State, mm-hmm, Mekhi Lemon from USC, mm-hmm, Jordan Tyson from Arizona State, uh-huh, Omar Cooper from Indiana. And then we have Casey Concepcion, who we talked about in the risers from Texas A&M, and then Denzel Boston. So those are my six that I have in round one right now.
I definitely like the idea of Concepcion being ahead of Boston in that respect, where I think you're going to get somebody who's going to be able to do more things dynamically early in his career, where you might just be getting Mr. Boundary guy and then hoping that that translates to the NFL in Boston. Who else did I have on my list here? Oh, Akeem Mesidor, Edge, Miami. I've seen him play. You've seen him play. Very impressive. He's 25.
Yep, that's the issue.
He's had two foot surgeries, one on each foot. And so we're looking at this guy and saying, was this the man among boys year for somebody who is already maxed out and has injury issues? That's my concern.
I will say Zach Seer is supposed to control for that.
And
does still like him.
Okay.
But you're right. The age thing is an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at the combine and I was talking to a bunch of people who are smarter than me and are, you know, work in the league or around the league. And I was like, am I missing something with Mesidor? I'm just seeing a ton of data ton of stuff in my data where he's just showing up in the first round.
Yeah.
And so to me, if there's ever a player who will fall out of the first round because of this, it's Mesidor, mm-hmm. because of all the things you mentioned. He's right. The one thing I will say is that he's new to edge rusher. He played defensive tackle primarily for a while. He's also mm-hmm. Canadian. Don't think that has anything to do with anything. I just wanted to say that. but, you know, in terms of teams that are interested in him, my mock draft shares have the Buccaneers, the Cowboys, the Chargers, and the Patriots, and maybe even the Lions as potential landing spots for Mesidor. I think a lot of the Buccaneers, that's like where they're kind of like Jason Light doesn't care. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. Jason Light tends to the Buccaneers tend to kind of buck conventional wisdom around who they're going to pick. Last year, Emeka Egbuka, I think people were surprised. Graham Barton, the center, was a surprise. Kalijah mm-hmm. Kancey, to a certain extent, the Pitt defensive tackle, was a surprise. So we'll see. But yeah, I think that's the place where my data says that he's most likely to land right now is Tampa Bay.
I can see Light saying that. I can see Todd Bowles being like, if he can play, he can play. I don't want to hear about all these other things. And then you can watch the tape and he can play.
Yep.
Oh, I'm next. My last one is Jadarian Price, running back Notre Dame. We all know he's Jeremiah Love's backup. We've all seen the film of him, I think, where it looks fantastic. He was a RB2 at Notre Dame. He has no receiving
value at all.
And he has fumble issues. And you got a guy who wasn't on the field a lot, but was on the field enough that you can see the fumbles. And then you say, okay, that's the potential for a guy. Can't catch. Coach doesn't trust him. He winds up on the back of the bench and we never see him again. So I have him below a lot of running backs. I honestly do not. This is freaking out on the limb. I don't have him in my 96. He's running back 2 on a lot of boards. I don't have him in my 96 because he's got that whiff of the guy who doesn't translate.
Backcast hates him, by the way. And I will point out what I pointed out in the backcast article on ESPN is that history is filled with dual backfields that disappointed in the NFL.
Yeah,
McFadden and Felix Jones.
Yes.
Yeah. Cadillac Williams, Ronnie Brown.
Rashawn Johnson backing up Bijan, who people were looking at Rashawn like he was going to be something. He's an NFL player, but yeah.
Right.
So Jadarian Price is my second ranked running back. Yeah. I have him ranked 51st in my data. Right. There is some buzz to Seattle with the 32nd pick of the first round. He's in 6% of my weighted mock draft shares for the Seahawks for round one. So if there's a first round spot for him, it's there. I think when I see a big gap between the positions, between mm-hmm. a onesie position, between the first one and the second one, I also tend to think that they might go lower, but a lot of people like him for whatever reason. So
when he's got the ball in his hands for like the 8 times a game, he's got it. He looks very, very good. And he looks quicker than Love. And he looks like that changeup type of guy.
I think he was a kick returner too, right? Well, I saw him in that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And he has return value. The Seahawks, I mean, how much of that is it's 32. The Seahawks lost Kenneth Walker. Let's put an interesting guy in there. I mean, that's happened sometimes with some of this mock drafting.
I think they're much more likely to go with a corner or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. My weighted mock draft shares for Seattle have, cornerback as a position. I think edge rusher could be a position for them. Mm-hmm. When you win the Super Bowl, your names seem a bit fewer. But yeah, I think, cornerback, Colton Hood, the Tennessee cornerback, Brandon Cisse, the South Carolina cornerback, Avion Terrell, the Clemson cornerback, Chris Johnson, the San Diego State cornerback, and then Jadarian Price. So,
because that's it. These cornerbacks are very good that you named. And then like a lot of positions like, oh gosh, those are good cornerbacks. That'd be great at 32.
Yeah. They have Charbonnet. They have Kenny McIntosh. I feel like they signed a free agent that I'm not remembering. They don't really need to do this.
I have no idea. I'm trying to look it up real quick, but now it's just causing dead air.
All right. Let's take one question before we get off. Eddie O'Leary says, let's talk Commanders at 7. Should they trade back? So I'll ask Mike, should they trade back? And Ben, who do you have them taking in most mocks?
Everybody should try to trade back. Like everybody.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone except the Raiders, basically. Yeah.
I think the Commanders specifically should trade back. They don't have a second round pick. Mm-hmm. I think they lost it in the Lattimore trade maybe or something like that, but they've been trading picks like nothing. They need more guys. They need to get younger. So,
yeah.
Yeah, the one of the older rosters in the league. When I look at my weighted mock draft shares, Caleb Downs, the Ohio State safety, is their top mocked player, but not by much. Jeremiah Love, number two, Reuben Bain, David Bailey, Sonny Styles. I think those are the five guys that'll be the most likely that they take. But yeah, Caleb Downs, if he doesn't go at five, I think he'll go at seven.
Yeah, you're right. If they can trade down, because again, they need to stockpile younger players. Takes two to tango. Yep. I guess the one thing that can be said about it is you're in the elite prospect range still there at seven. Like all the guys you're saying, like, oh yeah, get me that guy. If somebody wants Love and they think they got to get him there, or if somebody says, oh, this is my last chance to get Bailey slipping or Style slipping, then the Commander should pick up the phone. If not, they're getting a good player who's going to help them at any of those positions.
They should not take Love.
No.
They have so much
and
of a
yet.
Need to get younger on defense. So much of a need to get younger on defense. Oh, mm-hmm. My God, no.
No. Yeah. I mean, you could say that about almost every team in the top five. Should the Raiders take him? Obviously, no.
No, the obvious thing to take
should the Cardinals take him? No. You know, should. But then he's my second ranked overall prospect on big boards relative to Mendoza.
I mean, the Titans, I wouldn't hate it because they've got a quarterback. They're signaling they're not going to do it. It's not great. The Giants should not do it, honestly, even though they've got the quarterback. If the Love sweet spot kicks in around the Cowboys. Right?
It should, but it won't.
Well, he'll be gone by then, is what you're saying.
I believe so. Yeah.
Right. Someone earlier will talk themselves into him. And this,
All right. That does it for the draft preview show. Thank you, Ben. Again, grindingthemocks.com, Benjamin Robinson. And the Two Deep Zone 96 fully comes out on Monday, miketanier.substack.com. We will be back on Friday at 11 a.m. to talk all about round one and give you the best available players for round two. Until then, I am Aaron Schatz, Reed FTN. So long, everybody. Oh.